Just gone past 3 o'clock, which is nice. So now this is our ongoing meditation class. As I always say, have to say that on the Saturdays we have two classes on meditation. We have this class here for people who've been meditating a while, so they know the basics. And then we have the introduction to meditation class. And that's for people who are just starting off meditation, or people who I relegate to the introduction class if they leave their mobile phones on during the meditation session. So please, turn your your mobile phones off. Imagine what it would have been like in the time of the Buddha. He was sitting under the Bodhi tree about to get enlightened, and the mobile phone went off. There wouldn't be any Buddhism. So fortunately, we didn't have mobile phones in those days. So please make sure your phone is turned off and so it doesn't make any noise while people are getting enlightened. But it's also... Thank you. You can't be serious in this place. Quite frankly, I prefer it that way. So anyway, it's not your fault, it's a mobile phone's fault. It's always pass the buck. So anyway, welcome to our Buddhist Society a happy hour Saturday afternoon where we can do some meditation, learn how to calm the mind. And that's one of the ways of calming the mind, is just sometimes things happen that are totally out of control. And when they're totally out of control, you can't do anything about them anyway. The phone's gone off, the noise has happened, somebody has slammed the door, somebody has coughed. You can't sort of turn back the clock and make it not happen. That's actually part of life. And some of meditation is about learning how to deal with interruptions. So they don't interrupt the most important part of the meditation, which is this momentum, this flow of letting go. And that flow of letting go, you're giving up, you're not controlling, you're making peace with the world. And the more you make peace with the world, the more the world just cannot interfere with you and it cannot disturb you. It's a strange thing, but you know, when you're really tense and tight or you're trying to concentrate, then small things, they just really make an interruption to you, and you really feel it quite a lot. And it's going back to a little simile which I've given many, many times about the guitar string. The guitar string, when it's really stretched tight, something falls in it, bing, it makes a loud noise. When that guitar string is totally loose, nothing is pulling on it on either end. It has no stress or tension at all. Then when something falls on it, it makes no noise at all. So the same with so-called interruptions. If you are very tense already, been struggling, striving just to get here on a Saturday afternoon, your life is just really, really hard, or rather you make it hard, and then after a while it gets to the point where you get so tense and small things happen. Somebody little coughs or bangs the door, or the sound of what used to happen here years ago, just behind the door here, someone always decided just to do their lawn mowing on a Saturday afternoon about 3:15, right at the time when people were meditating, and you could hear it very loudly. Oh, those neighbors have moved a long time ago. Actually, they've just taken down the house and got units instead. So, and they used to have parties sometimes on a Friday night. And so when I was giving a talk on a Friday night here, just behind one of the houses over there, they would have a party. But you couldn't stop them. So instead you learn how to make peace with them. And of course, you know, in all those years which I've been meditating, you've been put in situations where it's really, really noisy. Well, perhaps the most noisiest place I've ever meditated, I think it probably is the most noisy place, was when many, many years ago, the Burmese Buddhist community were trying to do something to bring attention to what was happening in the country at the time. And so they had a little vigil. It wasn't sort of a demonstration with voices and screams and demanding this or demanding that. We just wanted to sit quietly outside, I think, the Uniting Church opposite Hay Street Mall. Remember, like I live in a forest monastery. I come here. I don't usually go into the city, certainly not into Hay Street Mall. And we're sitting right opposite Hay Street Mall, and for 2 hour meditation on the pavement. And I've never meditated in Hay Street Mall before, but it wasn't the mall was noisy. What instead was even more noisy, we were sitting opposite this shop. It was called Time Zone. It was like a video shop, we played video games. It's incredibly loud music was being played all the time, which drowned out any disturbance from the traffic or people talking. That was a big thing. And so 2 hours of meditating in front of music, which I didn't understand what it was. It's not my age of music, really loud. And can you do that? Of course you can. And all the idea of meditation, one of the great tricks of it, is to go inside. Because when it's a disturbance, you tend to pull you outside of yourself, pull you outside to the door, pull you outside to the person who's doing the coughing, pulling you outside to try and solve the problems there. And when you get pulled outside of yourself, into the street, into the time zone, or into whatever place is originating that music, that really disturbs you. You've got no chance there. But instead, you learn, probably from Ajahn Chah kept on teaching me, just to go inside of it. Don't sort of go out and try and fix it up. Go inside whatever the disturbance is, whether it's sound. Now, the sound may be over there or somewhere else, but you can go, don't sort of locate it. The disturbance is in your own mind. So go to the center of your own mind. Go inside. Or the same with, if it's things like coughing, or a mobile phone's going off, it's easy because they don't go off very long. It's only a sort of a second or 2 seconds and it's all gone. But I often mention on a Saturday afternoon that sometimes those mobile phones, the signal, it stops after a second or two, but it keeps on reverberating in your mind again and again and again as it triggers this not very useful way of using your mental faculties to keep thinking about it over and over and over and over and over. I don't know why we do it. It's an obsessive pattern of thought which we do. Whenever someone has irritated us or something has irritated us, we keep thinking about it. And the thinking about it is always much, much, much worse than the experience itself. That's the sort of things which I learnt as a young monk in Thailand. That wonderful old story of pushing the wheelbarrows. I won't say it in full because I keep on repeating my stories in full rather than actually meditating. So that particular story, pushing wheelbarrows, 9 days for your teacher Ajahn Chah. And they weren't fed very much. And it was in the hot weather, loads of mosquitoes, no mosquito repellent or anything like that. Being bitten to death by mosquitoes, really unfed, really dirty. And that was just such hard work. And I didn't become a monk to push wheelbarrows. I became a monk to meditate. So what happened was, after 3 or 4 or 5 days, 6 days, I lost my faith. These monks, the senior monks, never do anything. They just sit down there talking. That's what I do these days. Tell other people what to do. But I started getting angry. And your thing is, you can't hide your emotional stability. Other monks can see that. You can try and sort of suppress it. But other monks could see that I wasn't happy. And one of those monks said to me, pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. And those little sayings which you learned, yes, you can read about that in suttas. You can hear it from monks like me. But when you actually do that, you realize that the thinking about it, that was the noisy part. The tiring part for me was just complaining about it in my brain. Actually pushing it was no problem at all, pushing the wheelbarrow. It's the same with just any disturbances. The major disturbance is not actually the trigger of that disturbance, a mobile phone ring, the door bang, someone coughing or someone snoring. That just triggers something. It's what you do in your brain afterwards, all those thoughts, that negativity. That is the thing which is the problem in meditation. You can't stop people coughing. The best wood in the world. You can't always check your mobile phone is off. You know, sometimes you think it is, but it's not. So you can't stop that. What you can stop is the reactions, especially the negative reactions you have to all those disturbances. And that's also comes to my mind now, one of our monks, his little story was that his brother was coming to visit from Europe. And as usual, Bodhinyana Monastery, where I live, is just always packed out with people. There wasn't a place for his brother to stay. And so, what can we do? And so, this monk said, well, this is my brother. I grew up with him. And it's okay if we just share the room. Now, the monk's huts are very small, 3 meters by 2.4 meters. I know that size because I built most of those huts. And so, and that's not very big, 3 by 2.4. Two of you can fit in there. He said, oh yeah, we grew up together, you know, we're brothers, so shouldn't be a problem. But then this monk was, you know, middle-aged. I said, listen, at your age, you snore. And I bet your brother snores as well. So what are you going to do if one of you starts snoring? And the monk said, I've already thought about that. My idea is to make sure that I go to sleep first. That was, it was a really silly joke about that. No, well, I'll restrain myself for a change. He would go to sleep first and said, okay, best of luck. But of course, what happened that night, sharing the room together, his brother fell asleep first and started snoring straight away. Really loud. It's only in a small room. So he thought, oh my goodness, I'm in trouble now. I'm not going to get to sleep tonight. So what did he do next? He tried to ignore it. Tried to even meditate. Nothing worked. But then he told me afterwards what really did work, and just well done for this. He said his brother was snoring very, very loudly. And instead of trying to ignore the noise of snoring, instead of trying to just overcome it, he said he went right into it. He actually went into the sound rather than trying to get rid of it or escape from it. And when he went into the sound, he decided to use his reaction to it to imagine that it was the most revolutionary, avant-garde, innovative form of new music coming out of Europe, formless, all over the place, and as a reaction to modern music, which always has to have rhythms and forms. And he was imagining this snoring like modern music. I mean, my father used to say that much of the music I liked was just noise. And that's what he thought the snoring was at first. When he started going inside of it, he said the last thing he remembered before he woke up in the morning was how beautiful, melodious, sonorous, and magical was the sound of his brother snoring. He changed his reaction to it. He couldn't stop the snoring, but he can change the way he looks at it. That's all he needed to do, to actually to calm the mind down. So whatever you're experiencing during the meditation, don't need to look upon it as a distraction, as an interference. It's an opportunity to change the way we look at that experience. An ache, pain, sound, cough, whatever it is, that's already here. How are you reacting to it? If you react to it with kindness, opening the door of your heart and appreciating this moment. When I started building at Bodhinyana Monastery, had to, no one else could. One of the monks, he used to tell me he was a tiler from Sydney before. And he said, whenever we finished a piece of work, is that good, is that bad? And he said, oh, a blind man will be glad to see it. I always remember that little saying. So when I finished the job, a blind man will be glad to see it. In other words, not being critical, but looking at it in some sort of way where you can see something useful in it. No matter what the job, the quality of the job was afterwards. If none of the lines in the brickwork were straight, this was challenging the idea that everything in life should be straight. If the windows were crooked, wow, why do doors and windows have to be straight? Anyway, trying to find something in what you were doing to make it positive. And it's very hard to find something which you cannot praise. Even to the point that many, many years ago, I remember this little story that somebody was so positive at his workplace. All the other friends around said, he never complains about anything, his work friends. So let's test him out and say, They said, say something nice about one of the worst people in the world, Adolf Hitler. This man said, oh, he was a leader in this field. Can't really argue about that. But he always would find something good or beautiful or what, something in whatever he was confronted with. And changing the attitude to what you experience in meditation is really important if you want to be peaceful. So, that's about 15 minutes of a little introduction. One of the reasons I give 15 minutes of introduction is also to calm you down before we actually start the real meditation. So, now if you'd like to close your eyes, if you haven't already, get yourself into a nice meditation posture as best you possibly can. There'll always be some aches and pains somewhere, but look at those aches and pains with a positive mind. Welcome them. If you can't get rid of them, join them. So now, once the body is roughly comfortable, we try to go a bit more meticulous, more careful at relaxing our body and arousing mindfulness and kindness. These two qualities are what we're building up, they're the tools for meditation. Mindfulness and kindness. And they're used right throughout the meditation, to the very deep meditations. Just being aware and learning how to be accepting, grateful, compassionate to whatever we experience. I start with my legs, asking my legs, how are you? There's another way you can be mindful to the feelings in your legs, fine. As long as you can know just how your feet feel. For me it takes a few seconds before that awareness gets strong enough that I can really know if my feet are in a comfortable position. If they're not, I move them. I adjust them. And anyhow, I always like just being with those feelings and just relaxing them, making them at ease. Just even muscle by muscle, loosening everything so nothing is tight. You move to the ankles. You can feel the little throb in the ankles. Being with it, relaxing it. And when it's all settled down, calm, peaceful, I move on. Up to the legs, the calves. Can't feel any aches or pains there, so instead I just feel like the sensation of the skin. Sometimes it's like you stroke that part of your body, but now you're not touching it, you can still have its feeling, and you're aware of it. You go to the knees. How are the knees? You imagine they're just soaking in warm water. Maybe some herbs or salts inside that water, soothing any aches or pains in your knees. Imagination can often heal things. Kindness, the body reacts to it. And go up to my thighs. Feeling, relaxing, easing any tensions. So I get to my butt on the cushion, if you're on a chair, wherever. Feeling means you're alive, you're experiencing this. This is what you're dealing with. Now how do you change your attitude to what you're experiencing? You care for it. The feelings I have in my butt, compare them to those sounds that monk heard from his brother snoring. Should be unpleasant, but I can't get rid of it, so I'm going to turn my perception to one of pleasantness, positivity, towards now the feeling of the pressure in my butt on the cushion. And it gets all relaxed. The actual sensations are the same, but the reaction changes the way I perceive them. And I just move up to my back, give it a good stretch as I usually do. People have lots of back pain, and sometimes they meditate and always have to keep moving their back. And I get that movement out of the way at the very beginning. Stretching, and then letting go. Just like I ask my body, body, are you comfortable like this? It says yes. So I go to the front of my body. Again with the intestines, colon, like those digestive bits and pieces, and the organs in the back, and the stomach and lungs, really relaxing them. Just can feel my lungs, and just they just work non-stop ever since I was born. And I give them a sense of trust as well. You know how to breathe. I won't give you any orders. Made lungs, you'll be happy and well. And up to the heart. It'll go right through the whole of my torso. If ever I find some place which is tense, in pain, or just the word I usually use is like imbalanced. Something doesn't actually feel quite right. I just go into that, zoom in, focus in. And then when I'm inside something, a feeling, it's pretty easy just to be kind, be soft, take away the fear, let things be. And it relaxes, eases off. I'm just saying to these different parts of my body, some parts which I hardly ever look at, that I care for you. If you care for a part of your own body, it usually responds. It becomes peaceful and comfortable. Then I go up to my shoulders and relax those to the max. I don't want to hold anything tight. If I find it difficult to relax my shoulders, the usual way, say every week, is to go the opposite. Scrunch up your shoulders. Tighten them up as much as you can. And when they're at the peak of tightness, then let go. My muscles in my shoulders always get more relaxed than when I started. I can feel those muscles are just really nice now. So I continue the sweeping of the body awareness down my arms, past my elbows. Down the forearms, wrists. I'm only sweeping fast because there's nothing much going on there for me. Everything there is pretty healthy, comfortable, relaxed. And then to my hands, making sure all the fingers are comfortable. I'm just asking each one, are you okay? But sometimes in life, just when somebody asks you, are you okay? You know they care for you. And then you relax a bit more. I find that happens to every part of my body. I just look at the little fingers and are you okay there? It's like the little fingers say, well, he knows about us, he cares about us. And so they're much more at ease. I go back up to my neck. This time of the year I have this irritation, a bit of hay fever from something or other. Feel it. Be with it. Care for it. Always ensure I don't make the mistake of trying to cure it. Always caring for it. If there is an irritation there which doesn't go away, I'll change my perception of it. Imagine it's something beautiful, something pleasant, something I don't want to get rid of. And that solves the problem. And once that's all settled there, I usually go to the front of my face. So now that's those tightness, the tension in the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. That usually shows that is an emotional negativity, small or great, in that area. So relax those muscles. How I do that, I become as aware of them as I possibly can. Muscles around the eyes, first of all. I soon figure out the emotion which I need to do to let those muscles get very loose, the tightness disappearing. It's working for me now. My perception is that those muscles are easing off, getting loose. The same with the muscles around the mouth as well. Those muscles are getting relaxed. And so is my emotional world. Once that's all at ease, before I leave the body alone, I just notice as my object of meditation the whole of my body, everything joined up. Every part relaxed to the max. As you notice relaxation and even ease off even more parts of the body, you discover that relaxation is very delightful. I've learned to perceive that delight of relaxation. When I notice it, I make that the object of my meditation right now. A delightful feeling of relaxation. The physical relaxation deepens. It's a lot of meditation when you realize the delight in peace and stillness. The peace and stillness settle and solidify. When my body is relaxed, I know it's relaxed, then I will go deeper into the mind. If you go into the mind and try and focus inside and your body is still tense, it's hard to keep awareness on the mind. It always wants to go back and finish off calming the body down. I go inside the mind, the peaceometer, how peaceful am I? Giving it a number from 1 to 10. 1 is really, really peaceful. 10 is agitated. And always know that past and future, that really agitates the mind, gives it business to be done. In this moment, this present moment, just now, you're free. Nothing to be done. This moment may not be the best, but it's more than good enough because it's here. I'm being kind to this moment. embracing it, going into it. Those of you who like to do breath meditation, very often the breath comes to you. This time, the body is relaxed, the mind is calm enough. The biggest obstacles to breath meditation have been dealt with as best you can. At this point, if you're watching the breathing, it's so easy. You get rid of the obstacles first, then doing the breath is easy. Just with it. I always like to remind myself the breath is my friend, not my slave. Have the right attitude towards the breath. It's easy to watch. I'm not afraid of losing it. I don't own it. I'm just with it, enjoying its company. The mind becomes more and more peaceful. It gets into some wonderful deep meditations. So I'm now going to be quiet. When I start talking again as usual, it'll be close to the end of the meditation. Getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? How peaceful is the night? And how relaxed the body? And why? Oh, now ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it is the signal to come out from the meditation. Kids. Oh, lovely. Oh, that's nice. Ooh. Okay, so now we have the questions about the meditation. Again, it's nice to welcome children to our temple and to have them looking at people meditating. Shows them what's possible. You've got a... Yes, Thomas. Oh yeah, go to the...
Do you think it's likely that we can remember these meditation instructions when we die and go to the, say, like another realm? Yeah.
Yes, can you remember the meditation instructions when you die? Of course. Because you know what happens? It's like a training. It's not remembering the words, but remembering what you should do, or rather what you should not do. Because you have trained, train is the wrong word, because you've experienced many times of the mind being peaceful, just sitting there, not giving any instructions at all. Just how peaceful, how bright and beautiful that is. It does mean that when you get to your last mind moment, the last moments of your life, a lot of times you remember that's what you need to do. And so you just sit there and just relax to the max. The nice thing about the dying is your 5 senses are taken away from you. The sense of sight and sound, smell, taste and physical touch disappear. The brain starts to not register that anymore. So instead your mind is there. This wonderful 6th sense of mind. And that will just take over. And if that mind has been trained, as we do in meditation, it knows exactly what to do. You just let it do it. That's one of the reasons why in meditation retreats, I just say it as a bit of a flippant statement, but it's so true. That learning how to meditate, doing the deep meditations, is one of the best trainings you can do to die. Just how to watch the 5 senses start to vanish. Even just on this meditation, it was maybe 5 minutes before the end, roughly, that somebody coughed or shouted, or not shouted, but said something or heard something. It was like a million miles away. that's so common that as the sense of sound starts to fade away, it's like it's distant from you. It's a long, long distance away. That's how it sometimes feels. It means that, that sense is beginning to shut down, or it has mostly shut down. So nothing disturbs you. So you can just really work with your mind, just make it nice and peaceful and joyful. And go into these nimittas. That's what that was it. The lady in Hong Kong, what was her name again? Sorry? Thank you. Anita Murujani. That's what she did. No, she just probably fluked it. But just to be able to just let totally go, allow the mind to go to this beautiful, beautiful nimitta and enter it. So that's actually just what we do. She came back again so she could tell people what it's like. Okay, have we got any questions yet? Oh, you have there. There you go. Thank you. What was it? There's been quite a few other people here. There was one lady just came to mind. She was going to Bodhinyana Monastery driving. She must have, you know, just been tired or something because she fell asleep at the wheel. And, you know, she went onto the hard shoulder and the car just rolled 3 times. And she knew she couldn't unroll the car once it started rolling. But she said that she remembered the instructions, just let go. So she really totally relaxed. And when the car stopped rolling, you know, the car was a bit of a mess, but she was fine. She learned how to relax when it was really necessary. Anyway, how to feel happy when family members disappoint you and all you worked for seems to be nothing. Now, if you do any work, especially for your family members, you really try and do the very best. You do that not expecting success or anything back in return. You do it just for the sake of doing it. It needs to be done. If it works, wonderful. If it doesn't work, wonderful. And that's certainly just all the work which I've been doing over the last, don't know how many years here. Always remember that. You give it a try, see if it works. If it doesn't work, fine. But you needed to give it a try. And even to your family members, you do the very, very best you can. Get everything you've got. If it doesn't work, it's not meant to be. It's just impossible. But at least you had to give it a try. You're disappointed with the results in others. But if you look at what you've done, you'll never be disappointed with your kindness and your effort. That was beautiful. That's wonderful. Well done. How can you be disappointed in that? You're looking at the wrong place. Looking at what you've done rather than, you know, what it hasn't really helped your family. At least that's what maybe you think. Hasn't been for nothing. From Germany, do my feelings calm my mind, or does my mind calm the feelings? Are feelings part of the mind, or vice versa? Where do all things come from that disturb peace and silence? It's the feelings, if it's you're talking about the emotions, that they are just how often the mind reacts to the experiences of life. Just like family members disappointed you and you just tried so hard to do the best. But if you look at the wrong place, just again, it hasn't worked in the way you expected it to. But nevertheless, you've grown. You've put forth some kindness, some responsibility. That is wonderful. And so if you have the right attitude and response, then just the emotions become very calm and peaceful. Success and failure, it's just not the fact that there's something failing in you or there's something wrong with you, you can't always succeed. It's just one's life is like that. But at least you've given everything you've got and sometimes you do succeed. This is one of those little attitudes, which I learned when I was a student at a place like Cambridge. It was a rich university. But any experiment we wanted to try, even as like little students, you know, that you would be encouraged. Yeah, give it a try. Because the philosophy was that 1,000 experiments would be absolutely stupid. But then out of those 1,000, one would actually work and break new ground in physics. And Nobel Prizes would be won. We had to keep putting that search for something new. We didn't know what would happen until we gave it a try. And it was worth giving it a try. So anyway, the mind calms the feelings. Mind and the feelings, they are sort of interrelated. I know we like to have things nice and orderly and say this belongs here and this belongs there. But so much in life, it's hard to, you know, even as a librarian, you want to classify a book in which part of the library does it go. A good example of that is that first book which I wrote, The Opening the Door of Your Heart. And somebody in Adelaide, they sent me an email years ago saying they were looking for a copy of that book in the library. I don't think it's in the bookshop. And that they couldn't find it in the usual section, religion or self-help or something. They eventually found it in the medical section, because somebody just saw the words "open the door of your heart" and thought it it was heart surgery, yes. They actually, they knew I had a sense of humor, and they wrote back to me and said that was real, that happened. Of course they changed the classification afterwards, but sometimes we like to classify things, where does it actually belong? So the feelings, the mind, are they part of the mind or vice versa? They just a bit of each. Where do all things come from that disturb the peace and the silence? Where they come from is basically you. You allow things to disturb you. That you look at them in such a way that they can disturb the peace and the quiet. It said that, you know, meditating in very noisy places, you can still get into very deep meditation. Every now and again I tried that on purpose just to make sure that my meditation is still really strong. At that time, and just going to a conference in Thailand many years ago, I had 1 hour to wait for another delegate to arrive. And said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I just sit here." It was just an ordinary seat in the middle of the concourse. Closed my eyes and meditated. And just sometimes one of the tricks is to create a little bubble around you. Like my little cave, but an imaginary one. And soon I went so deep inside that bubble. And I could still hear the people talking or on their mobile phones and stuff. But it was just like a long distance away, not disturbing at all. A nice peaceful hour's meditation. It showed that it was a noisy place to meditate, but I just had an attitude where it didn't disturb me at all. It was really, really, really peaceful. So disturbances, you allow them to disturb you, they don't need to. From Indonesia, after meditating, I'm seeing life more clearly, the good parts and the bad parts. How do I handle the bad parts, anger wanting that I wasn't aware of before? You find the cause of anger. And if I kind of find a cause of wanting. I mentioned this a day or two ago. It's one of my favorite similes. And it's a cartoon which we have on the board at Jhana Grove. At least the last time I went there, it was there. And the first picture in the cartoon was this very angry man going to see his monk. And he didn't speak, he just had a sign. And the sign had three words in it: "I want happiness." And when he got to the monk took the sign. And the first thing he did, said, "Your first mistake," he crossed out the "I." Then all that's left was "want happiness." "Your second mistake, want." He crossed off the want. And then the monk held up the sign. Now, what does that say? Happiness. A very easy little teaching. I want happiness. The two mistakes are I and want. And even in your meditation, sometimes you think, ah, that doesn't work. You give it a go. See if, when you're sitting, you don't want anything in the whole world. Even if you're in pain or sick or tired, that's good enough for you. You don't want anything else. In the sense of I, see if that can just fade away. When there's no I, when there's no wants, there's happiness there. Much more than you can ever expect. Bliss, contentment. And it just, it's not, okay, it's not stable, but not in a negative way, because the contentment builds up more and more happiness. It gets very intense after a while. Intense satisfaction, peace, bliss. No I, no want. It just grows. So anyway, the bad parts, anger, wanting, find out their causes. There's always a wanting there somewhere. It's one of the reasons why when I meditate, I don't really do this much these days because meditation just flows by itself. But if ever there was a blockage in the meditation, sometimes, oh no, I want something, or I don't want something. There's a wanting there somewhere. And I just look at the state of mind when I was meditating and find out, what do you want? When I saw what I was wanting, the type of wanting, then I could just let it go. As soon as it went, then the meditation just went to a much, much deeper level. From California, I wish to meditate in the morning, but I find that I am tired and want to sleep once I wake. Instead, is sleeping more the right practice, as I'm not using force? What you can do is you can ask your mind and ask your body. Ask your mind, do you want to meditate or do you want to sleep? Body, do you want to meditate or do you want to sleep? It's being aware of the state of your body and mind. And if you're aware of the state of the body and mind, then you get the right answer. And there are some times when trying to meditate is a waste of time. Other times, you know, it's exactly the right thing to do. Your mind will tell you. That little bit of awareness. So what I often do that, ask myself, Ajahn Brahm, do you want to meditate? Do you want to sleep? Do you want some exercise? And I listen to the answer. It always gives me the correct answer. From USA, I am dealing with dizziness since 4 years. I am tired and wondering when this will be over as doctors are still screening me. Do you have any suggestions? I'm losing all hope. Oh my goodness, never lose hope with your body if you get your mind very strong. And dizziness. There's too many magic cures which I've seen through meditation over the many, many years. You know, times, really big ones, when people's, it's weird, but sometimes they've taken scans, and shown me the scans before and after they meditated. And just things actually changed. There's one gentleman, he was from KL, but I saw him in Penang. And I forget the name of the disease, it was a very, very rare disease, but it meant some of the blood vessels or something in the brain had all scrambled up. They weren't properly aligned anymore. And he was young. They gave him an operation, so it was a very painful operation. But he did it because he was getting married. And so he cured him for a while, but then it returned again. Showed the scan again, some of the blood vessels in the brain were again all scrambled. It was causing him a lot of difficulty. And then he had to make the decision, have a painful operation again, or just die. But his wife was pregnant with their child. And so he thought, this is really going to hurt, but I better go through with it. We wanted to find a different way of doing things, so he came to see me up in Penang when I was teaching a retreat over there. And I gave him some nice instructions, and I remember he came back afterwards, big smile on his face, So they went down to KL. Oh, it's not KL, Singapore he had the operation. And of course they took another, they had him all ready for the operation. They took another scan of his brain and then had this wonderful, if ever this happens to you, yay, get excited. When they said, oh, there's something wrong with the machine, we have to do the scan again. And of course, there was nothing wrong with the machine. It was just during the meditation retreat, his, I don't know how he did it, but the things in his brain all sort of evened out again, got in the right place. He did it himself. So they said after the second scan, they said, look, you know, we don't need to do the operation. Don't know what you've been doing, but it's okay now. I've seen that too many times. So if you are from USA dealing with dizziness since 4 years, doctors are still screening me. Yeah, let them still do the screening. But in the meantime, you do some nice meditation. You have to get into it. Sometimes when you're really sick or there's a problem there, that gives them almost the impetus to really get into it and make it work. See what happens. You've got nothing to lose. Meditation doesn't harm you, and it can do these miraculous cures, which I've seen. Next question. How to find out what I'm really passionate about? You know, sometimes people ask monks, is that, monks, are you passionate? Is passion good for a monk? Of course. Compassion, dispassion, many types of passions. But what that word passion means, you really, you know, have a lot of energy into what you're doing. So I've been struggling to find an answer by not finding anything. I recently started my career, but I'm not happy. Please help. Start your career, but some of the things which inspire you, like, again, like compassion, kindness. It's so easy to be inspired when you're kind to people and just go that extra little bit for them. It's one of the most beautiful things in the world to have the privilege to do a passionate act, a compassionate one. And whenever you do something beautiful and wonderful, and people say thank you, which sometimes you don't seek for thanks, but when they do, please take that on board. You've really helped someone and served them and been a great benefit for them. Celebrate that. And same with you, if somebody helps you, please thank them, because that means that that person will want to help again. When you praise somebody, it encourages their good behavior. It makes them repeat it. If you criticize them, they just give up. That's not a good thing to do. Okay, there's a few answers to a few questions. I hope they were useful. Are there any questions from the floor here, other than the usual one at the very end? Can we go now? Okay. So I'll be sitting here for a few more minutes. Next week, Ajahn Appy will be here because I'll be going to teach down in Albany for a few days to try and spread around a bit. And also, it's Ajahn Bamadi was supposed to be here next weekend. But he's, you know where he's in now? He's in Sydney. So I don't know when he's going to come back. They're all in lockdown over there. Well, anyway, that's life. We'll survive. Okay, so I wish you all happiness and well-being. We'll now bow to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can do what we need to do afterwards. For those of you who don't know, it's Molly's birthday today. She's been here for such a long time. So happy birthday, Molly.